Welcome to Voter Information, the show that looks at elections in the city, the state, and the nation. This is your election guru, Mark Brown here. Glad you could join us today. I remind you, you're listening to a recording provided for the use of those who are blind or print impaired. Materials or items read in Airs LA are the copyright property of the original authors and publishers. No unauthorized use or duplication is permitted. Okay. So just a little reminder, this show was recorded just hours after finding out about the passing of Jesse Jackson. So we'll give you that full article next week. So it's national stuff this week, and we're going to start off with one out. One person who is not running for re-election. That's from the Los Angeles Times, Tuesday, January 27, 2026. D.C.'s Norton, 88, answer re-election bid for seat in House by Matt Brown. Washington. Eleanor Holmes Norton, the 18-term delegate for the District of Columbia in Congress and a veteran of the Civil Rights Movement, has filed paperwork to end her campaign for re-election, probably closing out a decades-long career in public service. Norton, 88, has been the sole representative of the residents of the nation's capital in Congress since 1991. But she faced increasing questions about her effectiveness after the Trump administration began its sweeping intervention into the city last year. Mayor Muriel Bowser congratulated Norton on her retirement. For 35 years, Congresswoman Norton has been our warrior on the Hill, Bowser wrote on social media. Her work embodies the unwavering resolve of a city that refuses to yield in its fight for equal representation. Norton's campaign filed a termination report with the Federal Election Commission on Sunday. Her office has not released an official statement about the delegate's intentions. The filing was first reported by NOTUS. Her retirement opens up a likely competitive primary to succeed her in an overwhelmingly Democratic city. Several local lawmakers had already announced their intentions to run in the Democratic primary. An institution in Washington politics for decades, Norton is the oldest member in the House. She was a friend to civil rights icons such as Medgar Evers and a contemporary of other activists turned congressional stalwarts, including Representative Jim Clyburn, Democrat of South Carolina, and the late Representatives John Conyers, Democrat of Michigan, and John Lewis, Democrat of Georgia. But Norton has faced calls to step aside in recent months as residents and local lawmakers questioned her ability to effectively advocate for the city and Congress amid the Republican administration's aggressive moves toward the city. The White House federalized Washington's police force, deployed National Guard troops from six states and the federal district across the Capitol streets, and surged federal agents from the Department of Homeland Security into neighborhoods. The moves prompted outcry and protest from residents and a lawsuit from the district's attorney general. Norton's retirement comes as a historically high number of lawmakers announced they will not seek another public office. They will either seek another public office or retire from official duties altogether. More than 1 in 10 members of the House are not seeking re-election this year. As the district's delegate, Norton does not have a formal vote in the House, but she has found other ways to advocate for the city's interests. Called the Warrior on the Hill by her supporters, Norton was a staunch advocate for D.C. statehood and for the labor rights of the federal workers who called Washington and its surrounding region home. She also secured bipartisan wins for district residents. Norton was the driving force behind the passage of a law that provides up to $10,000 per year for students who attend public colleges outside the district. It also provides up to $2,500 per year for students who attend select private historically black colleges and universities across the country and nonprofit colleges in the D.C. metropolitan area. In the 1990s, Norton played a key role in ending the city's financial crisis by brokering a deal to transfer billions of dollars in unfunded pension liabilities to the federal government in exchange for changes to the district's budget. She twice played a leading role in House passage of a D.C. statehood bill. Norton was born and raised in Washington, and her life spans the arc of the district's trials and triumphs. She was educated at Dunbar High School as part of the school's last segregated class. Growing up black in Washington gave a special advantage. The whole community of blacks was very race conscious, very civil rights conscious, she said in a 2003 biography, Fire in My Soul. She attended Antioch College in Ohio, and in 1963 split her time between Yale Law School and Mississippi, where she worked as an organizer during the Freedom Summer of the Civil Rights Movement. One day that summer, Evers picked her up at the airport. He was assassinated that night. Norton had also helped organize and attended the 1963 March on Washington. In an interview in 2023, Norton said the march was still the single most extraordinary experience of my lifetime. She went on to become the first woman to lead the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, which helps enforce anti-discrimination laws in the workplace. She ran for office when her predecessor retired to run for Washington mayor. That was D.C.'s Norton 88 Answer Re-Election Bid for Seat in House by Matt Brown from the Los Angeles Times for Tuesday, January 27, 2026. Now on to some ins. Two from Minnesota with regards to their governor's race. First, from the Los Angeles Times, Friday, December 12, 2025, MyPillow founder says he is running for Minnesota governor by Stephen Karnowski. Shakopee, Minnesota. Mike Lindell, the fervent supporter of President Trump, known to TV viewers as the MyPillow guy, officially entered the race for Minnesota governor Thursday in hopes of winning the Republican nomination to challenge Democratic Governor Tim Walz. "I leave no town unturned in Minnesota," Lindell told the Associated Press in an interview ahead of a news conference set for later in the day. He said that he has a record of solving problems and personal experiences that will help businesses and that he will fight addiction and homelessness as well as fraud in government programs. The fraud issue was particularly dogged Walz, who announced in September that he is seeking a third term in the 2026 election. Lindell, 64, founded his pillow company in Minnesota in 2009 and became its public face through infomercials that became ubiquitous on late-night television. But he and his company faced a string of legal and financial setbacks after he became a leading amplifier of Trump's false claims that the 2020 election was stolen. He said he has overcome those setbacks. "Not only have I built businesses, you look at problem solutions," Lindell said in his trademark rapid-fire style. "I was able to make it through the biggest attack on a company and a person probably other than Donald Trump in the history of our media, lawfare, and everything." Though no Republican has won a statewide office in Minnesota since 2006, the state's voters have a history of making unconventional choices. They shocked the world by electing former professional wrestler Jesse Ventura as governor in 1998. And they picked a veteran TV pitchman in 1978 when they elected Home Improvement Company owner Rudy Boschwitz as a U.S. Senator. Lindell has frequently talked about how he overcame a crack cocaine addiction with a religious conversion in 2009 as MyPillow was getting going. His life took another turn in 2016 when he met the future president during Trump's first campaign. He served as a warm-up speaker at dozens of Trump rallies and co-chaired Trump's campaign in Minnesota. Trump's endorsement could be the key to which of several candidates wins the GOP nomination to challenge Walz. But Lindell said he doesn't know what Trump will do, even though they're friends, and said his campaign isn't contingent on the president's support. His Lindell TV streaming platform was in the news in November when it became one of several conservative news outlets that became credentialed to cover the Pentagon after agreeing to a restrictive new press policy rejected by virtually all legacy media organizations. Lindell's outspoken support for Trump's false claims that the 2020 election was stolen triggered a backlash as major retailers discontinued MyPillow products. By his own admission, revenues slumped and lines of credit dried up, costing him millions. Several vendors sued MyPillow over billing disputes. Fox News stopped running his commercials. Lawyers quit on him. Lindell has been sued twice for defamation over his claims that voting machines were manipulated to deprive Trump of a victory. A federal judge in Minnesota ruled in September that Lindell defamed Smartmatic with 51 false statements, but the judge deferred the question of whether Lindell acted with the actual malice that Smartmatic must prove to collect. Smartmatic says it's seeking nine-figure damages. A Colorado jury in June found that Lindell defamed a former Dominion voting systems executive by calling him a traitor and awarded $2.3 million in damages. But Lindell won a victory in July when a federal appeals court overturned a judge's decision that affirmed a $5 million arbitration award to a software engineer who disputed data that Lindell claimed proved Chinese interference in the 2020 election. The engineer had accepted Lindell's Prove Mike Wrong challenge, which he launched as part of his 2021 Cyber Symposium in South Dakota, where he promised to expose election fraud. Lindell said his crusade against electronic voting machines will be just part of his platform. Although Minnesota uses paper ballots, it also uses electronic tabulators to count them. Lindell wants them hand-counted, even though many election officials say machine counting is more accurate. Some Republicans in the race include Minnesota House Speaker Lisa Demuth, Dr. Scott Jensen, a former state senator who was the party's 2022 candidate, State Representative Kristen Robbins, defense lawyer and former federal prosecutor Chris Medell, and former executive Kendall Qualls. These guys haven't lived where I lived, Lindell said. Lindell wouldn't commit to abiding by the Minnesota GOP endorsement and foregoing the primary if he loses it, expressing confidence that he'll win. He also said he'll rely on his supporters to finance his campaign because his own money finances are drained. I don't have the money, he acknowledged. But he added that ever since word got out last week that he filed the paperwork to run, I've had thousands upon thousands of people text and call saying from all around the country, hey, I'll donate. That's MyPillow founder says he's running for Minnesota governor by Steve Karnowski. From the Los Angeles Times, Friday, December 12, 2025, Karnowski writes for the Associated Press. Tim Walz, as you know, is not running for re-election. And with Tim Walz dropping out, another major name has dropped in. From the Nation section of the Los Angeles Times, Friday, January 30, 2026, Klobuchar enters Minnesota's race for governor. The senator, a Trump critic, vows to stand up for what's right and fix what's wrong, by Bill Barrow and Steve Karnowski. Minneapolis. U.S. Senator Amy Klobuchar said Thursday she is running for governor of Minnesota, promising to take on President Trump while unifying a state that has endured a series of challenges even before the federal government's immigration crackdown. Klobuchar's decision gives Democrats a high-profile candidate and proven statewide winner as their party tries to hold on to the office occupied by Governor Tim Walz. The 2024 Democratic vice presidential nominee, Walz, abandoned his campaign for a third term this month amid criticism over mismanagement of taxpayer funding for child care programs. Minnesota, we've been through a lot, Klobuchar said in a video announcement. These times call for leaders who can stand up and not be rubber stamps of this administration, but who are willing to find common ground and fix things in our state. Klobuchar cited Trump's immigration crackdown in Minnesota, federal officers killing two Minnesotans, the assassination of a state legislative leader, and a school shooting that killed multiple children all within the last year. She avoided direct mention of the ongoing fraud investigation into the child care programs that Trump has made a political cudgel. I believe we must stand up for what's right and fix what's wrong, Klobuchar said. Klobuchar became the fourth sitting senator to announce plans to run for governor in 2026. The other races are in Alabama, Colorado, and Tennessee. Multiple Minnesota Republicans are campaigning in what could become a marquee contest among 36 governorships on the ballot in November. Among them are MyPillow founder and chief executive Mike Lindell, a 2020 election denier who was close with Trump, State House Speaker Lisa Demuth, Dr. Scott Jensen, a former state senator who was the party's 2022 gubernatorial candidate, and State Representative Kristen Robbins. The Minnesota contest is likely to test Trump and his fellow Republicans' uncompromising law and order approach and mass deportation program against Democrats' criticism of his administration's tactics. Federal agents have detained children and adults who are U.S. citizens, entered homes without warrants, and engaged protesters in violent exchanges. Renee Good was shot three times and killed by an Immigration and Customs Enforcement officer in early January. On Saturday, federal officers fatally shot intensive care unit nurse Alex Pretty during an encounter. Many Democrats on Capitol Hill, in turn, have voted against spending bills that funded Trump's Department of Homeland Security. A standoff over the funding could lead to a partial government shutdown. Trump and other Republicans also tried to saddle Klobuchar or any other Democrat with questions about the federal investigation into Minnesota's child care programs and its Somali community. Trump also has made repeated assertions of widespread fraud in state government, and his administration is conducting multiple investigations of state officials, including Walz. The Democrat has maintained that Walz's administration has investigated, reduced, and prosecuted fraud. DeMuth was quick to release a new video and a webpage that illustrate what's likely to be another main line of her campaign: that Klobuchar cannot be trusted to end the fraud in public programs or curb the growth of government. Minnesotans only need to look at her record to know that she simply cannot deliver the change that our state needs and would be nothing more than a third term of Tim Walz, DeMuth said in a statement. Now in her fourth Senate term, Klobuchar is a former local prosecutor and one-time presidential candidate who positions herself as a moderate and has demonstrated the ability to win across Minnesota. She won her 2024 re-election bid by nearly 16 percentage points and received 135,000 more votes than Democratic presidential nominee Kamala Harris. Harris outpaced Trump by fewer than 5 percentage points. Klobuchar gained attention during Trump's first term for her questioning of his judicial nominees, including now Supreme Court Justice Brett M. Kavanaugh. At his acrimonious confirmation hearings, she asked Kavanaugh, who has been accused of sexual assault as a teenager, whether he ever had so much to drink that he didn't even remember what happened. Kavanaugh retorted, "Have you?" The senator, who had talked publicly of her father's alcoholism, continued her questioning. Kavanaugh, who was confirmed by a single vote, later apologized to Klobuchar. Kavanaugh has denied that the alleged assault has occurred. After Trump's first presidency, Klobuchar was among the most outspoken lawmakers during bipartisan congressional inquiries of the insurrection on January 6, 2021, when Trump supporters attacked the U.S. Capitol during certification of Democrat Joe Biden's victory in the 2020 election. As Senate Rules Committee chair, she pressed Capitol Police, administration officials, and others for details of what authorities knew beforehand and how rioters breached the Capitol. "It's our duty to have immediate responses to what happened," she said after helping write a report focused not on Trump's role, but on better security protocols for the seat in Congress. Klobuchar sought the presidential nomination in 2020, running as a moderate in the same political lane as Biden. She launched her campaign standing outside in a Minnesota snowstorm to promote her grit and Midwestern sensibilities that have anchored her political identity. As a candidate, Klobuchar faced stories of disgruntled Senate staffers who describe her as a difficult boss, but also distinguished herself on a crowded debate stage as a determined pragmatist. She outlasted several better-funded candidates and ran ahead of Biden in the Iowa caucuses and New Hampshire primary. But Biden trounced her and others in the South Carolina primaries, prompting her to drop out. After Biden's victory, Klobuchar would have been well-positioned for a cabinet post, perhaps even attorney general. But the Senate's 50-50 split made it untenable for Biden to create any openings for Republicans to regain control of the House. Klobuchar announced in 2021 that she had been treated for breast cancer and in 2024 said she was cancer-free but undergoing another round of radiation. That was Klobuchar Enters Minnesota's Race for Governor by Bill Barrow and Steve Karnowski from the Nation section of the Los Angeles Times, Friday, January 30, 2026. Barrow and Karnowski write for the Associated Press. Barrow reported from Atlanta. AP writer Maya Swedler in Washington contributed to this report. And leaving Minnesota, here's one more in for the race for Alabama governor. From the Nation section of the Los Angeles Times, Sunday, December 14, 2025, former Senator Doug Jones launches Alabama governor bid by Kim Chandler. Birmingham, Alabama. Former U.S. Senator Doug Jones, the last Democrat to hold statewide office in Alabama, kicked off his campaign for governor Friday, saying voters deserve a choice and a leader who will put aside divisions to address the state's pressing needs. "With your help, we can finish what we began. We can build the Alabama we've always deserved," Jones told a packed crowd at a Birmingham campaign rally featuring musician Jason Isbell. He said the state has urgent economic, health care, and educational issues that are not being addressed by those in public office. The campaign kickoff came on the 8th anniversary of Jones' stunning 2017 Senate win over Republican Roy Moore, and Jones said Alabama proved back then that it can defy simplified labels of red and blue. "You stood up and you said something simple but powerful. We can do better," Jones said. "You said with your votes that our values, Alabama values, are more important than any political party, any personality, any prepackaged ideology." His entry into the race sets up a possible rematch with Republican Senator Tom Tuberville, who defeated Jones by 20 points in the 2020 Senate race and is now also running for governor. Both parties will have primaries in May before the November election. Before running for office, Jones, a lawyer and former U.S. attorney, was best known for prosecuting two Ku Klux Klansmen responsible for Birmingham's infamous 1963 church bombing. In an interview with the AP, Jones said families are having a hard time with things like health care and making ends meet. "People are struggling," he said. "They are hurting." Jones used part of his speech to describe his agenda if elected governor. He said it is time for Alabama to join most states in establishing a state lottery and expanding Medicaid. He criticized Tuberville's opposition for extending Affordable Care Act subsidies in the Senate. Jones said many Alabama families depend on those subsidies to buy health insurance to keep their families healthy. Alabama has not elected a Democratic governor since Don Siegelman in 1998. When Tuberville ousted Jones in 2020, the Democrat won about 40% of the vote, which has been the ceiling for Alabama Democrats in recent statewide races. Retired political science professor Jess Brown said Jones lost in 2020 despite being a well-funded incumbent, and that's a sign that he faces an uphill battle in 2026. "Based on what I know today at this juncture of the campaign, I would say that Doug Jones, who's a very talented and bright man, is politically the walking dead," Brown said. Jones acknowledged he being the underdog and said his decision to run stemmed in part from a desire that Tuberville not coast into office unchallenged. Jones pointed to recent Democratic victories in Georgia, Mississippi, and other red states as cause for optimism. Tuberville, who formerly led the football program at Auburn University, had no record except as a football coach when he first ran, Jones said, and now there are 5 years of being a United States Senator. There are 5 years of embarrassing the state. Jones continued to question Tuberville's residency, saying he doesn't even live in Alabama, and if he does, then prove me wrong. Tuberville has a beach house in Walton County, Florida, but has repeatedly said Auburn is his home. Tuberville's campaign did not immediately respond to a request for comment, but has previously noted that his commanding defeat of Jones 5 years ago. The Republican senator spent part of Friday with Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth in Huntsville to mark the official relocation of U.S. Space Command from Colorado to Alabama. That was former Senator Doug Jones launches Alabama governor bid by Kim Chandler, from the Nation section of the Los Angeles Times, Sunday, December 14, 2025, Chandler writes for the Associated Press. All right, on to other news, and this is from the Nation section of the Los Angeles Times, Tuesday, August 19, 2025. Democrats seek new crop of candidates. The party aims to compete in tough, often rural districts to retake the House in 26, by Joey Cappelletti. Fairview, North Carolina. Jamie Agar spent much of the last year rebuilding his farm in the foothills of western North Carolina after Hurricane Helene tore through the region, cutting power, destroying fences, and scattering livestock. Then, earlier this year, Agar lost his beef contract with local schools, a casualty of billions of dollars in cuts to the U.S. Department of Agriculture under the Trump administration. Now the fifth-generation farmer is running for Congress, part of a new crop of Democratic candidates the party is turning to as it tries to compete in the tough, often rural districts it may need to flip to retake the U.S. House in 26. Democrats say these new recruits are uniquely suited to break through in districts where President Trump's popularity dominates. Many, like Ager, are already a well-known presence in their communities. And in parts of North Carolina, Kentucky, Michigan, and elsewhere, the party is betting local credibility can cut through skepticism where the Democratic brand has fallen. Ager says he sees national Democrats as out of touch with rural life, too academic and politically correct and scripted. That's just not what people are interested in, he says. The ideas of helping poor people, being neighborly, the ideal of doing those things, I think, are worthy, good ideas that are actually popular. But the execution of a lot of those ideas has been gummed up, you know, not well executed. Heading into next year's midterms, Democrats believe momentum is on their side. Historically, the president's party loses ground in midterms. In 2018, during Trump's first term, Democrats flipped 41 seats to take control of the House. Republicans currently control the House by such a slim margin, Democrats need to pick up only a few seats to break the GOP's hold in Washington. The GOP-led tax break and spending cut bill has added to Democrats' optimism. About two-thirds of U.S. adults expect the new law to help the rich, a poll from the Associated Press NORC Center for Public Affairs Research says. About half say it'll do more harm than good for the middle-class people and people like them. Still, Republicans remain confident. They point to having fewer vulnerable seats than Democrats have this cycle. Only three Republicans hold House districts Democrat Kamala Harris won last year, while 13 Democrats represent districts Trump won. They also note Democrats' low opinion of their own party after last year's losses. In a July AP NORC poll, Democrats were likelier to describe their own party negatively than Republicans, with many Democrats calling it weak or ineffective. In places where local dynamics may give Democrats a shot, it means finding the right candidates is especially important, party leaders say. Recruitment matters in these years. When the environment is going to be competitive, Democratic pollster John Anzalone said. With power, water, and telecommunications down to last year's hurricane, Ager's Hickory Nut Gap Farm became a hub for the community, hosting cookouts and using propane to grill food for neighbors. Statewide, the storm caused nearly $60 billion in damage and killed more than 100 people. Little federal aid has reached the hardest-hit parts of western North Carolina. Helene Hitting definitely put an exclamation point on like, whoa, we need help and support, Ager said. Democrats see Ager as a high-risk, high-reward candidate who could be successful in a district where Democrats have struggled. No Democrat has won North Carolina's 11th congressional district since it was redrawn by the Republican-controlled legislature in 2011. A court-ordered redistricting ahead of the 2020 election made it slightly more favorable to Democrats, encompassing Asheville and much of western North Carolina. Republican Representative Chuck Edwards still won by nearly 14 percentage points last year and is expected to seek re-election. Grayson Barnett, a Democratic strategist who helped recruit Ager, said in some districts it's a risk to run a candidate who hasn't held elected office before. But I would argue that's a good thing. Especially when the Democrats just took the big hit we did, Barnett said. We have to look in the mirror and say, let's try something new. In a district where nearly 62% of residents live in low-density areas, Barnett thinks Ager's identity as a business owner, coach, and father with deep local roots cut through. His unpolished, direct style, he says, may resonate more than a polished political resume. In the video launching his campaign, Ager shows flooding on the farm and is seen on the porch of his home, feeding chickens, driving a tractor, and spending time with his wife and May 3 sons. I'm not flashy, but I'm honest, he says in the video. Ager does not call himself a Democrat in the roughly 2-minute video and rarely used the word during a 3-hour interview. Still, his ties to the party run deep. His brother serves in the state house, following in the footsteps of their father. His grandfather served 6 years in the U.S. House. As whether that might be a liability to the district, Ager shrugged, then don't vote for me. In western Michigan, State Senator Sean McCann is a different kind of candidate from Ager. He's a buttoned-up and soft-spoken with a long resume in elected office and deep roots in Kalamazoo, having served for a decade on the city commission before winning a seat in the state house in 2010. In a district anchored by conservative and religious values, Democrats see McCann as the kind of steady, experienced figure who can make inroads, especially as backlash builds to Trump's tax bill, which includes a deep spending cuts. At a recent meeting at Kalamazoo's Family Health Center, where nearly 65% of patients rely on Medicaid, the center president warned the proposed Medicaid cuts would be devastating. It's about being home in the community and listening to our community's values and carrying those to Washington, McCann said. The district is represented by Republican Representative Bill Haysinger, who won re-election by nearly 12 percentage points in 2022. But Haysinger hasn't said whether he'll seek another term, and Trump carried the district by only 5.5 percentage points in 2024. Across the country, Democrats are watching similar races in places like Iowa and Kentucky, where candidates are strong with strong community ties are running. In Iowa's 2nd District, State Representative Lindsey James, a fourth-term lawmaker and Presbyterian pastor, is weighing a run in the northeast part of the state. In Kentucky's 6th, which includes Lexington and Richmond, ex-federal prosecutor Zach Dembo is running his first campaign, describing himself as a political outsider. It's a mix of profiles. Ager, the farmer-turned-candidate feeding neighbors after a hurricane. McCann, the public servant meeting with health workers in his hometown, and others like them trying to reconnect with a skeptical electorate. Yes, the Democratic Party has some taint to it, Ager said, but when I go talk to Republicans who are friends that I've known forever, there's genuine admiration and mutual respect for each other. And that comes from being in this community forever. That was Democrats Seek New Crop of Candidates by Joy Cappelletti from the Nation section of the Los Angeles Times, Tuesday, August 19, 2025. Cappelletti writes for the Associated Press. AP writer Maya Swether in Washington contributed to this report. And we have this one from the Perspective section of the Los Angeles Times, Sunday, September 7, 2025, in Remapping Fight, Utah Judge Stands Up for Voters, by Mark C. Baraback, columnist. It's been more than 60 years since Utah backed a Democrat for president. The state's last Democratic U.S. senator left office nearly half a century ago, and the last Utah Democrat to serve in the House lost his seat in 2020. But, improbably enough, Utah has suddenly emerged as a rare Democratic bright spot in the red versus blue redistricting wars. Late last month, a judge tossed out the state's slanted congressional lines and ordered Utah's GOP legislator to run a new political map, ruling that lawmakers improperly thumbed their notices and overrode voters who created an independent redistricting commission to end gerrymandering. It's a welcome pushback against the growing pattern of lawmakers arrogantly ignoring voters and pursuing their preferred agenda. You don't have to be a partisan to think that elections should matter, and when voters express their will, it should be honored. Otherwise, what's the point of holding elections? Anyhow, redistricting. Did you ever dream you'd spend this much time thinking about the subject? Typically, it's an arcane and extremely nerdy process that occurs once a decade, after the census, and mainly draws attention from a small priesthood of line-drawing experts and political obsessives. Suddenly, everyone is fixated on congressional boundaries for which we can thank our voraciously self-absorbed presidents. Trump started the whole sorry gerrymandering business, voters and democracy be damned, by browbeating Texas into redrawing its congressional map to nab Republicans as many as 5 additional House seats in 2026. The paranoid president is looking to bolster his party ahead of a tough midterm election when Democrats need to gain just 3 seats to win a House majority and attain some measure of control over Trump's rogue agenda. California Governor Gavin Newsom responded to Texas with a proposed Democratic gerrymander, and perhaps you're thinking, well, what about his attempted power grab? While your friendly columnist has deplored efforts to end run states the voter established redistricting commission, at least the matter is going to on the ballot in November 4th special election, allowing the people to decide. Meantime, the political race to the bottom continues. Lawmakers and Republicans run Florida, Indiana, Missouri, and Ohio may tear up their congressional maps in favor of partisan gerrymanders, and Democrats in Illinois and New York are beginning to do the same. When all is said and done, 10 or so additional seats could be locked up by one party or the other even before a single ballot is cast. This when the competitive congressional map nationwide has already shrunk to a postage stamp size historic low. If you think that sort of pre-baked election and voter obsolescence is a good thing, you might consider switching your registration to Russia or China. Utah, at least, offers a small ray of positivity. In 2018, voters there narrowly approved Proposition 4, taking the map drawing process away from self-interested lawmakers and creating an independent commission to handle the redistricting. In 2021, the Republican-led legislature chose to ignore the voters, gutting the commission and passing a congressional map that allows the GOP to easily win all four of Utah's House seats. The trick was slicing and dicing Democratic-leaning Salt Lake County, the state's most populous and densely packed, and scattering its voters among four predominantly Republican districts. There's always going to be someone who disagrees, Carson Jorgensen, the chairman of the Utah Republican Party, said airily as lawmakers prepared to give voters the middle finger. In July 2024, Utah's five Supreme Court justices, all Republican appointees, found that the legislature's repeal and replacement of Proposition 4 was unconstitutional. The ruling kicked the case over to Salt Lake County District Judge Diana Gibson, who on August 25th rejected the partisan maps drawn by GOP lawmakers. Cue the predictable outrage. Monday's court order in Utah is absolutely unconstitutional, Trump bleated on social media. How did such a wonderful Republican state like Utah, which I won in every election, end up with so many radical left judges? In Gibson's case, the answer is her appointment by Governor Gary R. Herbert, a Republican who would be considered a radical leftist in the same way a hot fudge sundae could be described as diet food. Others offered the usual condemnation of judicial activism, which is political speak for whenever a court decision doesn't go your way. It's a terrible day for the rule of law, lamented Utah Republican Senator Mike Lee, who was apparently concerned with legal properties only insofar as they serve his party's president and the GOP, having schemed with Trump allies in their failed attempt to overturn the 2020 election. In a ruling last week, rejecting lawmakers' request to pause her decision, Gibson wrote that Utah has the opportunity to be different. While other states are currently redrawing their congressional maps to intentionally render some citizen votes meaningless, Utah could redesign its congressional plans with the intention to protect its citizens' right to vote and to ensure that each citizen's vote is meaningful. That's true. Utah cannot only be different from other states, as Gibson suggested, it can be better. That was in Remapping Fight, Utah Judge Stands Up for Voters by Mark C. Baraback, columnist, from the Perspective section of the Los Angeles Times for Sunday, September 7, 2025. Obviously written before we voted on the proposition that passed. All right, with the time that we have left, let's give you the full rundown of the candidates running for the now open seat for the delegate for D.C. in Congress. Running as Democrats are Deidre Brown, a former advisory neighborhood commissioner, Gordon Chafin, former congressional staffer, Greg May, a candidate for the seat in 2022, Brooke Pinto, a council member from Ward 2, Trent Holbrook, a former senior legislative counsel for Norton, Robert White, an at-large council member and candidate for mayor in 2022, Kelly Michael Williams, podcast host and candidate for the seat in 22 and 24, Kenny Zelizny, Deputy National Finance Chair of the Democratic National Committee and former counselor at the Department of Justice, Vincent Morris, former spokesperson for Senator Bernie Sanders and former Mayor Tony Williams, Sandy Stevens, occupation unknown, and Robert Matthews, Director of the District of Columbia Child and Family Services Agency. Among running as Republicans are perennial candidate Nelson Rimmensnyder and Gavin Solomon, a businessman from New York, and then a party called Statehood Green Primary, where their candidate running is Kimone Freeman, a radio host, a nominee for the seat in 2024. And running as an independent is just one potential at this point, Christina Henderson, an at-large member of the council. Well, that is only just going to be a handful of congressional races that we're going to be covering as soon as that information is available to us. And of course, there's going to be a lot of other races and candidates happening right here in the city, the state, and the nation. Until next time, everybody, this is your election guru, Mark Brun, saying to you, happy voting, and of course, peace. See you next week.